You know what was on the jukebox in the front. Now Matt the Cat's gonna show you what was on the juke in the back.
From the east to the west, I'm giving you the best and leaving the rest, cause I must attest that we have a solid hour of 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues coming your way right now on your radio. Bringing the music back and putting you on track as I lay down the shellac. And that's a fact, Jack, I'll jump back and have a heart attack. I'm Matt the Cat, where it's at, doing the do just for you. And this week on the Juke in the Back, or as I like to call it, the soul that came before rock and roll, we are going to focus on one of the most influential groups of all time. And they only lasted for a year and a half. That's all it took, baby. And you know, I throw the word influential around a lot on this program. And of course, many of the groups and artists that I play on this show are extremely influential. So I don't throw that word around lightly. And this week, we have a monumentally influential character. The Teenagers, featuring Frankie Lymon. Much has been said, much has been written. And on this program, I think we should avoid talking about the tragic downfall of Frankie Lymon. Let's focus on the wonderful music that he and four other teens created in late 1955 through early 57. Those were critical months, not only for the Teenagers, but also for American popular culture, for the development of rock and roll, for rhythm and blues music, for doo-wop, vocal group music. Why do I say that he was so influential? Well, think about it. Frankie Lymon and his early teen, high-pitched tenor soprano voice launched so many copycat groups, basically an entire subgenre of early rock and roll. It became dubbed as the kiddie lead subgenre. You had the students, the schoolboys, the youngsters. Some groups, like the Kodaks, even had female leads. Pearl McKinnon, who was disguised as a boy. We didn't know she was a girl. We thought she was another preteen boy. And where did Frankie Lymon's influence end up going? To Motown Records, the late 1960s, The Jackson 5 with Michael Jackson. You can't get much bigger than that. Maybe the DeFranco family. Let's go back to where it all began, baby. New York City, 1955. Jimmy Merchant, who grew up in the Bronx, just moved to Washington Heights in Manhattan. He met bass singer Sherman Garnes, and they formed a group called the Earth Angels. Then they met a Hispanic kid named Joe Negroni, who was forming a group with his friend Herman Santiago called the Ermines. Negroni asked Garnes to come sing bass for the Ermines and to bring his friend Jimmy Merchant along, while Herman Santiago happened to live across the street from Frankie Lymon. Frankie Lymon was not asked to join this group. Frankie Lymon was making ends meet for his parents, who were working really hard. His father was a truck driver, his mother was a domestic. And little Frankie, at age 13, was working at the corner grocery shop. And you know who lived above that little grocery shop? Richard Barrett, who had just started making records recently for George Goldner at Rama Records with his group, The Valentines. Frankie Lymon started to fall in with the Ermines as they kind of bumped into each other and heard each other at talent shows. But he was younger and smaller than the rest of the guys. But man, could he sing. He wasn't the lead, though. Herman Santiago sang most of the leads. Sometimes Jimmy Merchant took a lead. And sometimes Frankie and Herman would sing a duet. Richard Barrett couldn't avoid hearing these kids singing on the street corner right below his window. So he took an interest in the group and said maybe he can get them an audition with his boss, George Goldner, at Rama Records. Coming up in just a few minutes, I have an interview I did years ago with the late, great Herbie Cox of the Cleftones, where Herbie describes being in the studio the day the Teenagers came in to audition for George Goldner. But before we do that, let's kick off the show with the B-side of the Teenagers' first record and one of the early songs they brought to Goldner, called Please Be Mine, recorded at their first session held at Bell Sound in New York City in November of 1955. It was issued in December as the B-side of their first single, Why Do Fools Fall in Love? Here are the Teenagers featuring Frankie Lymon and Please Be Mine as we feature this great influential group right here on the Juke in the Back.
Falling.
Why Do Fools Fall in Love? The Teenagers featuring Frankie Lymon. Recorded in November of 1955. Released in December, it entered the charts in February, and by March 17th, it was number one on the Rhythm and Blues chart, where it sat for 5 solid weeks. Where did it go on the pop chart? Well, cats and kittens, it crossed over to number 6. Not too shabby. Maybe it was written by Herman Santiago. Maybe it was written by Frankie Lymon, Jimmy Merchant. I'll tell you who it wasn't written by. George Goldner. But Goldner's name ended up on the label because, as we've talked about countless times on the show, that is what happened back then. Record label owners, producers, they would take songwriting credit in order to get some of the publishing on these records. When gangster Morris Levy took over George Goldner's enterprises, all of his record labels, he replaced Goldner's name with his own. And if you look at the songwriting credit on that song today, it is only credited to Frankie Lymon and Morris Levy. What happened to Herman Santiago and Jimmy Merchant? Well, there was lots of lawsuits, there was decisions, there was reversals of decisions, and that's where we are today. Backing the Teenagers up on that record, and all of their records, was Jimmy Wright and his orchestra. Jimmy Wright, the great underrated saxophone blower, man. This cat was just, oh, he was insane. He was out of this world. His sax solos, among the best of early rock and roll and vocal group music. Oh, please do yourself a favor. While you're listening to the great harmonies of the Teenagers on this week's program, give special attention to the fantabulous Jimmy Wright sax solos. So what happened when the Ermines came in to meet George Goldner and audition for him? It's been said that Goldner was tricked into the audition. He didn't want to hear some young group. But Richard Barrett had told him that there were 2 Hispanic guys in the group. And Goldner liked Latino music. In fact, he owned Tico Records. When the group came in to audition, they had Why Do Fools Fall in Love? But at the time it was called Why Do Birds Sing So Gay? A line that Santiago and Merchant had lifted from a batch of letters that were given to them by a tenant in one of their buildings who was sick and tired of hearing them practice in the hallway and gave them this box of letters from his girlfriend to try to inspire them to write a new song. So, one of the lines was, "Why do birds sing so gay?" The song was way too short to be recorded, so Goldner asked Richard Barrett to work with the group, arrange the tune, add some lines. But what happened that day when they auditioned? Wouldn't it be great if we actually had a first-person account of what happened that day? Well, cats and kittens, I do, because I interviewed Herbie Cox of the Cleftones, who happened to be at George Goldner's office the day that the Ermines, who would soon be redubbed by Goldner as the Teenagers, came into his office. Here's how Herb Cox describes the event.
No sooner had we got out of the box with You Baby You, and Little Girl of Mine was on the rise, along comes the Teenagers, who basically became the number one act on the label. Frankie Lymon was just tremendous, and these were kids, maybe we were a year older than them, but not much. But Frankie was 2 or 3 years younger than we were. Mm-hmm. So he was absolutely a star. You could hear it the minute we were in the office when he auditioned. Richard Barrett from the Valentines brought him into audition, and we heard them right there. And when we heard them first sing, Frankie wasn't singing Why Do Fools Fall in Love. It was Herman Santiago, who indeed was the writer of the song. Mm-hmm. And he had to prompt Frankie when George says, no. George Goldner asked me, I'm sitting there by him, you know, I'm the veteran of one record, right? And yeah. 17 years old or so. And he says, Herbie, what do you think of this kid singing Little Eat? And Herman, who I love and respect to this day, still has a very heavy Hispanic accent, and he's singing, "Why do birds sing so gay? And lovers say, wait the break of day." And, you know, and it was okay, but I said, well, and I didn't want to hurt his feelings. I mean, I could hear he had a strong accent, but I wasn't more than 12 feet away from him, and George was always very gruff and loud. "What do you think? What do you think of this kid, Herbie? What do you think of him singing lead?" I'm looking right at Herman, and he's like, and I said, "Well, I think he's okay." And George looked at me, took his cigar out, and he says, I'll never ask you another damn thing about business as long as you're in the music business. So he had heard Frankie, who was doing a background, that, he was doing that part. He said, let me hear that kid back there at the high voice. And Frankie said, I don't really know all the words, sir. And Herman had to prompt him. Thus, people can read into that what they will, mm-hmm. but years later, when Frankie and George were credited with writing the song, that'll tell you something about that.
Yeah.
But I never, ever blamed Frankie. He was pushed along. You know, yeah. He was just a kid, and he was a nice kid. He was a great kid and a tremendous talent.
He was 13.
I think 14, but that's close enough. He was a kid, you know.
And, right.
And he had a tough time in the group because they were all older than him, not much, more mature. But you know, young boys, the big thing is that they were all bigger than him.
Yeah.
So he was pushed around and bullied, and then when he became the lead singer and the focus of everything, I personally think that took away from Frankie the one thing he really needed. That was the camaraderie of the group. And, it sort of put a little wedge between them, I believe. Frankie was very close with our group. Our bass singer took Frankie in as like a kid brother. Warren Corbin was very nice to Frankie Lyman. And on the road, Frankie always liked to stay close to Warren. And to this very day, we're still close to the remaining teenagers. On the road, we would hang out together. Sherman Gons, myself, Joe Negroni with Berman. Charlie James often hung out with Jimmy Merchant because they were both harmony nuts. They were always trying to figure different harmonies together. You know, they had a language that, that they understood. So we could what could have made us bitter rivals and enemies never happened, and it really made us a better group. They got the spotlight. We had to go the long way. We had to learn our craft, and we did.
I love you, baby, and I want you to be my girl.
Generous support for Juke in the Back provided by weekly sustainers Janice Stenhouse, Robert Stallworth, Barry from San Diego, Mr. Lee, David Ayers, Thomas Huber, Joe Metzger, Bernie Rossman, Barry from Riverside, and contributors Mark and Marion McAlpine, Ken Farger, Gail Kuntz, Kerry Bagley. Thank you for your support. More information at jukeintheback.org.
One more thing. This is Bobby the Bobcat, making you want to jump, drive, and wheel.
Hooli Baba Ga, Baba Ga, Baba Ga, Ga.
Hooli Baba Ga, Baba Ga, Baba Ga, Ga.
I Promise to Remember by the newly minted Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. Previous labels stated them as the Teenagers featuring Frankie Lyman, but now it's been switched around to Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers for a song that was recorded on May 15th, 1956 and released in June, where it topped out at number 10 on the rhythm and blues lists and number 57 pop. I wonder if the reason why that song didn't do better on the pop chart is because the publishing didn't go to Morris Levy, George Goldner, or Alan Freed. The writer of that song and the original recording of that song was done by a kid, Jimmy Castor, and his group, the Juniors. It was originally titled I Promise, and it was issued on Wing Records, which was a subsidiary of Mercury, in 1956. Jimmy Castor wouldn't come to fame in his own right until the late 1960s, early 70s, when he became a soul funk hero with It's Just Begun, The Creature from the Black Lagoon Is Your Father, Troglodyte, The Birth of Butt Boogie, and so many more early funk classics. Incidentally, Jimmy Castor joined the Teenagers much, much later in their career. Let's hear a little clip of what Jimmy Castor's version of I Promise to Remember sounded like.
Dum dum make dum dum make dum dum make dum.
I promise to love you no matter what you do. I want you, I need you, I love you through and through. Oh, I promise to be true.
So Frankie's version is much smoother, and we can probably thank Richard Barrett's vocal arrangements and Jimmy Wright's amazing backing band for making Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers' version of that song just sound more polished and ready for radio. But what Jimmy Castor and the Juniors show us is how quickly the imitation groups were coming out. This new sound wasn't just a high-pitched male lead voice. It was also the subject matter. These songs were aimed right at teenagers, and they were being sung by teenagers. This was completely different than what came before. Before this, when you had young kids singing songs, they were usually using adult themes and singing for adults. Now, with rock and roll, you had a music aimed at the younger generation, and now there were people from that generation participating in the songs. Now, before we go forward to the flip side of the Teenagers' third single for G Records, I want to go back to their second single, which we heard a few minutes ago, I Want You to Be My Girl. Recorded February 16th of 1956, the original title of that song was Come On Baby. It contains that famous line, "Come on baby, let's go downtown," which was lifted from that song and included in The Flying Saucer, also from 1956, from Buchanan and Goodman. That song received a lot of exposure, taking it to a whopping number 3 on the rhythm and blues chart and crossing over to a very respectable number 13 pop in May of 1956. Now let's flip over I Promise to Remember for Who Can Explain, which also made the rhythm and blues charts. It was recorded on May 2nd, 1956 and hit number 7 on the rhythm and blues chart. It did not chart pop, however. But baby, you gotta dig on Jimmy Wright's sax solo on this one. One of his finest moments. So now let's take that G Record 78 and drop it down on the platter, spin around and make it splatter like waffle batter, baby. Here's this week's Juke in the Back feature, Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers with Who Can Explain?
Gosh knows I love you. Heaven knows it's true. I want to be
Well, if you're aiming your music at young kids, it doesn't hurt to have a little lesson involved. Those are the ABCs of Love, recorded August 23rd, 1956, but that wasn't their first attempt at the song. It actually was first recorded back in May, but that version was abandoned. And it's a good thing they redid it too, because in October of 56, that one hit number 8, Rhythm and Blues, and number 77, Pop. Now in mid-1956, Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers are playing a lot of shows. I mean, they have a heavy, heavy schedule. They're playing Alan Freed shows. They're playing engagements at the Apollo. They're going on cavalcade shows with other vocal groups. And they're scoring hits, more hits than many of the vocal groups of their day. I mean, in July, Cashbox Magazine's disc jockey poll names them the best up-and-coming male group. But as we'll see, it wouldn't last. And the cracks are just beginning with their fifth single, I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent, which failed to chart. It was their first release that did not make the charts. Recorded in October, G Records released it in November. Here's this week's feature on the Juke in the Back. Frankie Lymon and the Teenagers with I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent.
I'm not a juvenile delinquent.
No, no.
Oh,
Paper Castles, one of the teenager's finest ballads, recorded in October of 56, but not released until January of 57. It failed to make the charts. But the teenager's fame was still riding high. They were featured in Alan Freed's movie Rock, 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 which came out in November of 1956. Now teenagers everywhere could see Frankie Lyman in action. His good looks, his great stage presence, the whole package. They perform I'm Not a Juvenile Delinquent and Baby Baby in the film. What's interesting is that with all this exposure and all this fame, their singles continue to miss the charts. Like this next one, one of my personal favorites, and I might be alone in this, but I think Love is a Clown is a great Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers tune. It was recorded all the way back in February of 1956, but not released until March of 57. What do you think of it, cats and kittens? Here's this week's feature in the Juke in the Back, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers with Love is a Clown. Now it's time for the Great 78, where we take a thick piece of shellac and harken back to a time when 78 RPM records were king. Now we're going to flip over the ballad Paper Castles for a great up-tempo number called Teenage Love. It was recorded in October of 1956 and issued by G Records in January of 57. It did not make the charts, but Alan Freed gave this a lot of airplay around New York City. And it's this week's Great 78, Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers with Teenage Love.
Come on, laddie, say de boom.
Run, 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 de, run, de, papa, to run, ton. Run, de, run, de, papa, to run, ton. Run, de, run, de, papa, to. A wheel.
Boom, 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 boom.
As I was going to school one day, I met a cute girl who passed my way. She looked like a goddess. More like a queen, she stole the heart of every teen. I said, look ahead, baby.
listening to The Juke in the Back with Matt the Cat.
The song that you sang so sweetly, you called it our love refrain. It's gone and I'm left completely.
One of their most beautiful tunes and the last song to chart for the group as a whole, Out in the Cold Again. As a solo artist, Frankie Lyman would have two more charting records, Goody Goody in 57 and his version of Little Bitty Pretty One in 60, though it was recorded in 57. The issue was that Frankie Lyman's voice was changing and his new voice sounded good, but it isn't what the public wanted. That didn't stop him from trying, though. He tried his hardest to continue a career. The teenagers also tried to keep things going without Frankie Lyman. They had several more lead singers, but they just couldn't make it. So what pulled the group apart? I think it's a couple of things. One being that the style of rock and roll was changing and becoming a little more sophisticated. The kiddie group sound just wasn't cutting it. And with Frankie Lyman's talent, I think they thought they could mold him into a pop singer, because most of the songs he recorded after the breakup with the teenagers were pop-oriented songs. George Goldner was also moving a bit out of the picture. See, he was a heavy gambler, and Morris Levy was about to take over his labels. After losing his labels to mobster Levy, Goldner did start two more successful labels, End and Gone, and he continued to have hit records. But along with Frankie Lyman's career starting to go downhill, his personal life was taking a major dive. It's said that he was hooked on heroin by age 15. He may or may not have married three women, one of which was Zola Taylor of the Platters, but that might have just been a publicity stunt. He was drafted into the army to avoid jail time after a heroin bust. He went AWOL from the army and then was dishonorably discharged. But by 1967, at the ripe old age of 26, his life was starting to get back together again. He had been clean from heroin for 2 years, thanks to a stint in the military, and his career was starting to take off. He was recording again, and then he slipped up to New York City. And on February 27th, 1968, he was staying at his grandmother's house in Harlem, celebrating by taking heroin again. And that's when he overdosed and died at the age of 26. To this day, Frankie Lyman remains as popular as he ever was. They made a movie about his three wives trying to get custody of his estate called Why Do Fools Fall in Love back in the 90s. And Jimmy Merchant and Herman Santiago of the Teenagers spent many years in court battling with Morris Levy trying to get writing credit on Why Do Fools Fall in Love. They were awarded it, and then the Supreme Court reversed the decision of the lower court due to a statute of limitation. And to this day, Why Do Fools Fall in Love is still credited to Frankie Lyman and Morris Levy, though we know they were not the writers of the tune. And that song, man, that song, one of the greatest records of all time. From beginning to end, it's upbeat, it's exciting, it's got a great sax solo, it wails, and it will still be enjoyed for generations to come. I'm Matt the Cat, and I hope you've enjoyed this week's edition of The Juke in the Back, focusing on Frankie Lyman and the Teenagers. Until next time, remember, soul, it's a feeling, and you get that feeling when you tune into your source for 1940s and 50s rhythm and blues, right here on The Juke in the Back. I have to thank Marv Goldberg, whose R&B notebooks are an invaluable source. Now, let's go out with the Teenagers at the height of their career. It's late August 1956, and they're appearing on Alan Freed's CBS radio show, The Rock and Roll Dance Party. Here they are on live radio, performing I Promise to Remember and Why Do Fools Fall in Love. Have a great week, everybody, and I'll catch you on the flip side next time. Bye-bye.
The Teenagers and I Promise to Remember.
Holy Papa God, Papa God, Papa God.
Promise to be true.
Jackie Lyman and the Teenagers return now with Why Do Fools Fall in Love?
Whiskey and the women have all gone home. Thanks for dropping by. Feel free to let Matt the Cat know if you dug the show. Email him at mattthecat@mattthecat.com. Juke in the Back is recorded at Rosie's Juke Joint, located at the Stepping Stone Inn in Salem, Massachusetts. For more information, please visit jukeintheback.org. I'm Miss Rosie. See you next time on the Juke in the Back.